Hello, and welcome to episode 32 of Tabletop Game Talk, a show where we talk about tabletop games of all types. I'm one of your hosts, Josh.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Kitty.
Today, we'll be talking about gateway games. It's been 32 episodes, and somehow we've not talked about gateway games yet. So, we're going to do that today, but first, as always, we'll start off topic.
Thanks, Josh. Welcome to the show. If this is the first time listening, welcome back if you've listened before. First, thanks to our patron friend of the shows, Emil Jiljam, Jacqueline Hagar, Shane Poole, and George. Also, our newest patron, Stefan Phillips. Josh, I hear you know this person.
Yeah, it's actually my flesh and blood brother. Thanks, bro. You're a legend.
Yep. And we'll try to cover games for four-year-olds for you. We'll throw that in there in the gateway games. I think 4 years old is a good way to start talking about gateway games.
Definitely.
Yeah. So, on to some quick news announcements and things that aren't directly related to our topic. First, we should mention our current contest. We're giving away a copy of Fields of Green. I've been giving away
so
many things.
Yeah.
This is sponsored by Stronghold Games, so thanks Stephen Bonacore for sponsoring this. Other games that you may be interested in by Stronghold Games, Terraforming Mars, which is a great game. Josh, I think, is one of your favorites.
Love it.
Great Western Trail, which is one of my favorite games right now.
I can't wait to play it. You were like so excited, and
I
you're
know.
Not normally this excited about games. So,
Sydney took it to her friends, Josh and Reed, and they played it over the weekend. And it was like a 4-hour game for them because they were kind of learning it. It was a bigger 3-player, so it took a little bit longer. But they're like, when they got done, it's like, I can't believe that game took 4 hours, and it just wasn't enough time.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, wow. So it is a really, really good game. Again, if you like point salad games, if you don't like point salad games, you're not going to like it. But otherwise, it's like one of the best of the point salad games. And they have a few other things coming out. I think Not Alone is a good one. It's a 1-versus-mini, very small box game. Actually, that would go into a good gateway game, really. It's really easy to set up. So let's see. But we're giving away two prizes on this one. So first prize is the Fields of Green. And actually, you'll end up getting that in April when it comes out, when Stronghold is actually publishing it. Second prize, or parallel prize, I don't know what's better in my mind, is our very first t-shirt that we're giving to someone outside of the group of us. It's just a t-shirt with our lovely animated faces on it. So good luck on that one. And if you want to enter, go to our tabletopgametalk.com website, click on the giveaways button, and fill out the form there. If you have already entered, then you have a private link that was emailed you the last time. Just click on that, and then there's just the two fields you need to fill out. Yes, I want to join the contest, and I'm asking for suggestions for show topics, just to see if there's anything that we've missed. We talk about topics all the time, but anything good
is there still anything about sending it within the contiguous 48 states or anything?
Yes, good, thank you.
That's right.
If you are in the contiguous 48 states, I will cover shipping. This one though, because Steven is going to be shipping it out himself, and probably for most future ones, if you're outside of that, we may contact you and just be prepared to cover shipping depending on what it is. I don't mind going up to like $20, $25. That's completely reasonable. But if it's going to cost me like $70 to ship it to South Africa, we're going to talk. So we'll come up with some way to work around that. And I forgot I never actually set a deadline on this. So Friday, April 7th. And from now on, I'm going to do Friday as the deadline. So Friday, April 7th, midnight your time. So that works for me, because then by Saturday morning when I actually go through everything, that's midnight for everyone's Friday. So Friday, April 7th, midnight. Send it in. Let's see. This weekend, I went to GaryCon.
How was it?
So it was my first GaryCon. It's in Lake Geneva. It's called GaryCon because it's in honor of Gary Gygax, who basically made Dungeons & Dragons what it is today. 10 years ago, he passed away, and this is honorary convention basically in his name, and literally in his name. And it was a lot of fun. There's so many like just legends of the industry here. I spent a good 2 hours talking to Matt Forbeck. He's like an author. He knows everybody. He did the Dungeonology just recently for Dungeons and Dragons, but he's basically a big author. I talked for like an hour with Mike Merles about football and baseball. He's really into sports, so he's a big Patriots fan, and he lives in Seattle. Yeah. He's a big Patriots fan, so it's a very interesting Super Bowl for him. But that was a great time. I didn't talk to him about anything Dungeons and Dragons-y. It's like, we're drinking. We don't talk work right now. He didn't say that. I just wasn't going to bring it up. I spent a ton of time hanging out with Brett and Sean from the Gaming and BS podcast. Honestly, the highlight. Like, it was so much fun. I talked to Brett about gaming stuff. I talked to Sean about like podcast stuff and equipment and things like that. So that was a whole lot of fun there. I listened to Brett's actual play. He has a Streets of Avalon, which is his D&D world. And he mentioned it, and I'm not really listening to podcasts for actual plays. But I'm like, all right, I'll give it a listen, see. And I binge listened to about, I think it was like 4.5 hours. On
this is
Saturday
a D&D?
Morning. It's a D&D, yeah. Right, right. Yeah. But it's a very, very radio show. It's very well edited. Mm. It's basically a story with some minor mechanics. Wednesday Night All-Stars is what you'll have to search for to find it, right. But it's the Streets of Avalon logo. I will put a link in the show notes. If you haven't listened to an actual play before, though, give it a shot. Like I said, I don't really listen to them, but I got really involved in it. They did a really good job with it. And I talked to some people from Gamehole Con, mostly because Brett and Sean like introduced me to the right people. So we might have a table this year at this year's Gamehole Con.
Nice.
On their podcaster row, they want to bring in a few number. They had two last year, so they want to bring in a few more and maybe have some demo tables where we can set up games and play games with anyone that's up there. So that'll be kind of fun. That was my weekend. It was a good time though.
Nice. Sounds so awesome. Oh, we should do weight updates as well, by the way.
We should. Mine is, I didn't gain any weight. So I was down a week.
You were even.
Yeah, I was down a pound this week, and then I went to Gamehole Con, and I came back, and I'm like, this isn't going to be pretty. And I looked at him like, okay, all right, I'm breaking even. I can do breaking
even. Not
too even.
Bad so, when you've been drinking.
Yeah, so I'm still at 190.0, so 24.8 overall. Next week, I will be below the 190 mark.
Sure. And I'm 173.3, so I'm 1.1 down, 10 overall. Not bad.
That's not bad. Yeah. Yep, I like it.
Sweet. Well, let's go into some feedback about past episodes. And if you have feedback about this or any of our previous episodes, email us at tabletopgametalk@gmail.com and become part of the conversation. So first we've got Tom Bly, who says, yesterday I listened to a few more episodes and loved them all. The top five games episode was great. I took notes on those games and planned to try them out at some point. Wanted to share with you a few of my favorite games, not in any particular order.
So we should note, he's giving us top five. Tom Bly has been listening from episode one all the way through. So I don't even think he's listened to the latest episodes yet.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. That's so, cool. Tom, when you get here, welcome to the future.
awesome.
So this is going to be great feedback. So.
First one, Burgle Bros, which I've not heard of. Apparently a Kickstarter game by Tim Fowers. Next one, Legendary Marvel. The expansions work really well with each other, allowing unlimited combinations.
Yeah, this is kind of the same legendary system of Legendary Firefly. So it's just with the Marvel superheroes.
Gotcha. King of Tokyo, which has become a bit of a classic game and quite a gateway game, I must say.
Indeed.
It's put a great game that's fun and different obtainable power combos that really make it interesting. Betrayal at House on the Hill with 100 different scenarios with Widow's Walk expansion. There is tremendous amount of replayability. It's a regular with my gaming group.
Yep. Interesting note on that one. It's done by Avalon Hill, which is owned by Wizards of the Coast, which is owned by Hasbro. And Shelley Mazenoble, which is on the Dungeons and Dragons podcast, is like, she worked on the expansion. So I've heard a lot of it from her side of it. Maybe I'll reach out to her and see if she wants to talk about it on our show.
Not a bad idea. So the last one's One Night Ultimate Werewolf. And he says, you can use this game to knock out two or three quick games in 15 minutes as a segue between larger games. Honorable mention to Risk. It's my go-to classic game and used to play this with my fraternity brothers almost weekly.
Kitty had a reaction to One Night Werewolf. Go for it.
Just don't like it.
Wait, you One Night Werewolf?
Yes.
Really? But I...
Not like Werewolf. One Night Werewolf.
Yeah, like I've only played it once.
The tokens, like, you switch them around. Yeah, it's more of a puzzle. It's not even social deduction because you don't even know who you are.
I don't know.
All
maybe
right.
It was the people I was playing with. I'll give it another shot.
All right.
You can not like it. It's okay.
Well, I kickstarted One Night Alien which should be coming in the next couple months. So same thing. They're all compatible with each other, One Night Vampire.
Maybe I like it better because it's not werewolves.
It's aliens. Yeah. We'll give it a try. We'll see.
Sweet.
All right. So time continues. Something I didn't hear mentioned in the D&D episode is Roll20. It's a great website to use to play all sorts of role-playing games with people from across great distances. I once had a group that I ran where all five people lived in different countries, US, Canada, England, Japan, and Germany. It's also really easy to find a new group to play together without leaving the house. I also found a couple of games that are great for couples / two players. Love Letter. While it goes up to four players, it's a great head-to-head, or it plays great heads-up with another person. I can't read today. Sorry, right. Guys. Star Realms, while a space-fighting deck builder, is great for two players, and it can be expanded up to six with extra decks. Tiny Epic Western is also a lot of fun to play with just two people.
Yeah. Thanks for the extra, like I said, feedback on past episodes. We can't catch everything, but I have not yet paid Tiny Epic Western. I thought I pre-ordered it, but apparently I didn't. So now I have to go find it. Star Realms, I don't think you guys have played Star Realms, but you played Hero Realms. And Hero Realms is the fantasy version of Star Realms. So that one is kind of fun's heads up. I've done that one with Sydney as well.
Nice. Well, we've got Shane from YouTube. I love the episode. Another example of a negative side of Kickstarter things was Project Elite. It was Konstantinos Kokinis, who owns Artipia Games, nailed it, even stated that he could not take the hate, the frustration and negativity it caused anymore. I find it fascinating the different experiences that different publishers have with Kickstarter. Choosing a publisher to give you more of a profit is not always the best decision, as shown by several Kickstarters that have had major issues.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard for designers to just take all the negative input. And they do great games. Actually, this is the company that does Fields of Green. So this is the same game company. And Fields of Green, I mean, I got my game just fine. But when we got a lot of people who got the games, when you open it up, the inserts were all smashed up. And actually, some of the cards were, like the packs themselves had broken open. And the cards were just kind of spread out all over in the box. It wasn't really a big deal for me. I get rid of the inserts anyway, but if I was one of those fans, like, this has to be perfect, it wasn't, and it was a big shipping issue that he had to deal with. And I think that had a lot of, you know, people are just, they'll complain about anything, they'll complain about a dinged corner, but when you open the box and it's just like everything's all sprawled out, I can completely understand why that would generate a lot of negative feedback.
All right. Some feedback from Sam on our reboxing video of Fields of Green. I enjoyed the reboxing video, and it's a great different take on the usual board game review. I love the idea of showing how you can store a game in order to get it back on the table in under a minute or 90 seconds. I'd love to see more.
Yep. So I just recorded one. It'll come to me in a second, but really intense gamer, or a phrasing of that.
But you can go to our YouTube and see the latest reboxing, and you'll be like, oh, it's that game.
Well, so we had a comment on that one. It's like, oh, I really want to do this for Lords of Waterdeep. And I'm like, oh, I haven't actually pulled out Lords of Waterdeep in a while. So I pulled it out and I opened it up, and like all the tokens all spread out and the cards are all over the place. And Lords of Waterdeep probably has one of the best inserts for any game ever, as far as like a place for everything. And in the instruction books, it tells you how to put everything away. It's not very useful. It takes forever to put stuff away. You have to pull everything else to get it set up. It's just a pain. So I'm like, I'm going to do a reboxing on this one. So I just set up the camera, I think yesterday or this morning, actually, I think I did it. So it's not. It may be on YouTube by the time you guys hear this, but just to see what I could do with it. And I was able to box everything, get rid of the big box, put everything in the expansion box. I actually lifted it up on the video and shook it and turned it upside down and stuff. Being like, yeah, now I don't have to worry about it. Open it up and everything's fine. So I'm going to do more reboxings, and I'll add information to it. So Kitty and I, when we did the unboxing, we talked about the components as we were pulling them out. Josh and I did that for Assault of the Giants. We're going to do that in reverse. We're going to talk about the components as we put them away into the method I use, and then we'll do a quick follow-up video of how to set the game up with the reboxing and show you why I do it the way I do, because it makes it really quick to get it to the table. So expect more of those to come.
All right, Sam continues. Thanks to you guys, I backed my first Kickstarter by backing Oh, I should have read this earlier. Cytosis? Yeah, sure. And Grim Forest. I also picked up Not Alone based on your high recommendations, and I'm thoroughly enjoying it. Woe is my wallet. Welcome to life with Chris.
Yep. Chris's world.
Yeah, I'm glad you're liking Not Alone. I think that's great. I have not seen Cytosis or Grim Forest, and I apologize that you now have a Kickstarter account. It only gets easier to click pledge. Warned.
Grim Forest is a good title. I'll have to check
it
that out.
It is a good title. I need to check that one out, too.
I love fairy tales, and Grim has me intrigued.
Yep.
I'm going to go look that up.
I was about to read we have notes for the off-topic section. Patrons will eventually get access to these notes, I promise. And you're going to get access to them before the show even airs, so you can kind of see them change throughout the week. But anyway, it says notes from Chris. I'm like, wait a minute. Is that someone who's leaving a note, or is that me reading the notes? It's me reading the notes. This is how this works sometimes. Zach let me know that I was saying Ryan Lockhart when it's really Ryan Lockett. I apologize to Ryan and everyone else who's like, what is he saying? Who is he talking about? This is the designer of Near and Far, Empires of the Void, Above and Below, those games. So
Chris Ryan has a way of making up his own pronunciations, as we will discuss in our Pandemic Legacy side chat.
That is true. Yes. It's more fun for me this way. Also, Inish. I-N-I-S. So I was pronouncing it Innis. Apparently it's pronounced Inish. Mm-hmm. I would have never known, but Talking Meeples on Twitter let me know. And
Thank you.
Yes. So like I said, this is the segment of the show where Chris says, I said these things wrong. And I listen to our own shows and I'm like, that wasn't a word I just used. Or that's not exactly a sentence structure that would pass in even grammar school. So I'm very aware of this. Also, a shout out to Alex in Australia. I'm going to add Game Genres Part 2 to our list of topics. So he was like, he wanted to hear us go back on games that we've played more, genres that we've played more, and get like our take on new things, especially around deck building games for him. So I'm listening.
All right.
So, wait, we don't have
a quick question. I pointed this out earlier.
No. We were going to do games for four-year-olds.
Oh, are we going to talk about them now?
Yes.
All right.
But you got to read the segment first.
Sorry. So let's go to a question from one of our listeners. This is a question that won't fill an entire show topic, but that we think is interesting nonetheless. Today's question comes from...
my brother, Stefan.
So thanks, Stefan. Games for four-year-olds. I play a few games with my preschool class, some of the classics mostly, because all my games come to me through donations to the park. So we might not have like the newest and best games, but we have some really fun ones. Candyland is the classic game. And
I've never even heard of that game.
It's not a game, that's why. But it is the classic kids game because there's no decisions. It's basically roll and move.
Oh.
It is. It is a roll and move, but it's teaching kids how to play a game, how to
take turns.
So it's very much like Chutes and Ladders.
It is.
Yep. Which we actually call Snakes and Ladders, but
yes.
Chutes and Ladders is like this. But Candyland, I was actually looking at it with new eyes when I was playing with my class after doing this podcast for so long. It has more rules and mechanics than I thought it did.
Yeah, actually, I was thinking Chutes and Ladders, which that one technically is just roll and see where you land and follow the instructions. It's not a game by adult standards because there's really no decisions to make, but it does teach small children. Now, Candyland, though, I haven't played in too long.
Candyland is a roll, but it's not, you don't roll, you draw cards. So you draw the color. So you move your piece to the next square of that color. And sometimes you get double squares. Sometimes you get stuck in different places. But the game, the board is really fun. The game is very colorful. And it does, like with kids, the biggest part of playing a game, I think, is they need to learn how to follow the rules. They need to learn how to take their turn, wait for their turn and take it. And they need to learn how to win and lose nicely.
Yeah.
And Candyland does all those things. Hi-Ho Cheerio is a really fun one.
I actually like Hi-Ho Cheerio.
Whoa, I've never heard of this either.
Hi-Ho Cheerio is everyone has their own tree full of cherries and
they're little plastic cherries.
Yeah.
Of different colors.
I thought they were all red.
Are they all red? Oh, but the trees are different.
The trees are different colors.
Wait, hang on. Is the tree like a natural 3D tree that stood up? Oh, no, no, no. Okay.
It's like a cardboard board, but it sits up in the box. Mm-hmm. So there's little holes that the cherries sit in.
Okay.
Yep.
And you pick them from the tree. They like sit nicely on top and you put them in your little bucket that sits into the board. It's a fun design. So you spin and you get to count. Counting is a big skill that kids need to learn. So,
yeah. And it's very tactile because these cherries have stems on them. And it's really just a spinner.
Excellent fine motor skill development.
Yeah. I was going to say, I'd imagine a lot of good sort of young person games would be sort of those dexterity ones. You know, the kind of mouse trap or the hungry hippo or don't break the ice.
Don't break the ice is a really fun one where you build like a little ice rink. And you like tap out the bricks one at a time.
Oh, I've seen a YouTube recently and there's a penguin in the middle. It's like basically the same game that you're describing and you tap out the mm-hmm. squares and they fall through. Yeah, that would be perfect.
That's a fun one.
Yep. And Sequence for Kids. This was actually something that my friend Becky recommended and I played it. And it's just a deck of cards that have different animals on it. And you're playing this and you're trying to get, I believe, 4 in a row in this. And there's a couple cards that do special things. Now, this one actually starts teaching strategy because this is a decision-based game. And you're kind of making these choices. You want to get, you know, 3 giraffes or 4 giraffes in a row or something. And there's a decent amount of thought to this.
Do you think it would be too hard for someone, say, 4 years old? Do you think that's maybe pushing it too far?
It depends on the kid development at that age is so
variable.
Yeah.
Variable. Right. Also, I haven't actually played this one, so I think I have the most experience with 4-year-olds, but the least experience with this game. So right. I'm not sure.
Well, I mean, and it's really relatively straightforward because it's just cute animals on the cards, and you just need to line them up.
Okay.
And you only have, I think, like 2 or 3 cards in your hand, so the decision is very slow. It's like I'm going to play the monkey next to the other monkey,
right?
You know, and you're trying to match those up. So there's a sequence for adults as well that's played with an entire deck of regular playing cards, and it's a much bigger board and a lot more strategy. And you normally play in teams and stuff, but the kids one is actually quite fun.
Memory games are also really fun, and this is if your kid likes something. They're branded for everything. Memory, where you flip over two and you're trying to match the tiles.
Gotcha.
That's a fun one.
Yep. So if you have suggestions, if you have small kids and you have games you play with them, shoot us an email, tabletopgametalk@gmail.com, and let's see if we can't get some more help out there, because this is a very common question.
Definitely.
Yep. And 4 is a tricky age, so. Let's it's anywhere true. From four to six, I think, is like there's so much development happening at that time.
There is leaps and bounds. 3 to 6 is you make a huge jump in development.
Yep.
So it's hard to make generalizations too at that age.
Yeah.
You got to know your kid, know the game.
Yep. Mm. All right. Now to my favorite segment, new games I own or have kickstarted. It's just an excuse for me to buy games. And as a side effect, I also make people aware of new games. Games you might have missed, things you might find interesting on Kickstarter. So this week, I picked up a game at GaryCon called Guildhall Fantasy. There's another version of Guildhall that is not a fantasy version. And I saw this two Gen Cons ago, or maybe last Gen Con. And it looked interesting to me. And it was like, buy one, get one half off at. So I'm like, all right, I'll pick it up and just have a game. It's a relatively small box. It is not what I expected, but it is actually a very good game just to play with a group of people. Very casual, easy to learn. This would be a decent gateway game. We'll talk a little bit more about it there. But the way this game works is there are a number of character classes. So clerics and rogues and warlocks and those types of things. And you have these characters have basically 3 levels on them. Some of them only have 2 levels, but level 0, level 2, level 4. And so warlock will have 5 different colors. And rogues will have 5 different colors. So always all the colors are the same. And what you're trying to do is build up your guild hall. And you keep adding different characters to your guild hall. And when you play the card into your action area first, its level is based on how many of the equivalent cards you have in your guild hall. But you're not allowed to play the same color twice. So I can't play 2 blue rogues. If I have a blue rogue in my guild hall, I can't play a blue rogue. But I can play a red rogue. And then if I have 4 rogues in my guild hall, then I can play the red rogue at level 4, which is like the steal all the stuff card. And then the whole point of the game is to get 20 victory points. And you get victory points by completing sets of 5 and buying victory point cards. There's a fair bit of iconography on here. I did not realize at first that I didn't have to decode every card, because it also comes with like some square cards that describe what every card does. I just overlooked that. I thought that was like an optional piece. I'm like, I don't know what these cards are for, but it doesn't seem like you need them for the game, which you don't, because they're part of the instructions. So that's why we were a little confused when we first started. But once we got past it, we had a lot of fun with it. So that's Guild Hall. I picked up yesterday Tales of the Yawning Portal. This is the newest Dungeons & Dragons adventure supplement. There's 7 classic Dungeons & Dragons adventures in it. So that one's going to be a lot of fun. And Santorini. Yeah, someone mentioned it last week, and I'm like, okay, I need to pick this up. This is a really, really cool game. So I said, Sydney, you have to come play this game with me. And she looks at it, and she's like, are you sure you don't want to do anything else? I'm like, no, let's try it. Why was she so
against it?
Well, it looks kind of kiddish.
Oh, yeah, the art does, doesn't
it?
Yeah.
But I actually think I love the art style. It's like, it's Chibitzy, I guess. I think I'm pronouncing that right.
Right.
There's too much glare here.
Yeah, there's a lot of... I'm working on getting new lights for the YouTube stuff, so
we'll make the glare better.
I will put a link on our show notes so you can take a look at it. But the what... Santorini,
it's very cartoony, yeah. Get me saying
it's very cartoony, and it has all of the different like Greek and Roman gods that you can play different gods in. It's a island, so it's very tactile as well, and you're building up buildings. So what happens is you have 2 workers on this board, and I believe the board is 6x6. Don't... check me on that, but I think it is. You move one of your workers, 1 space, forward, backward, left, right, diagonal, just whatever space, and then you build adjacent to them. So again, any of the 8 squares around it. Your goal is to get your worker to jump on top of a level 3 building. So after you move, your opponent moves, and they can build too. Now you can build, even if you're on the very bottom level, you can build all the way up at the top if you wanted to. It's just as long as it's adjacent. But you can also jump up 1 step. You can jump down as many steps as you want. And if someone's getting close, you can also put caps on the building, which are these little blue domes, and that means nobody can get there. So that's a way of blocking.
Like the place, the actual place Santorini that has these white houses with the blue domes on
exactly.
top. Right, which is why the game's called that. Okay. Yep.
So at the end of every game, you have this 3-dimensional board, which just looks really, really cool.
It sounds really fun.
Yeah. So when you first start playing it, you can play without any of the special powers. So you just, your first game, you just kind of move and build. That's all you do. But there's a stack of cards that come with this. And there's an expansion that comes with it too. And the expansion and the game came out at the same time. You can tell because the instructions for the expansion are in the base rulebook. Mm-hmm. But the base rulebook is 1 page of instructions, and then the rest of it's just how to play these different god cards, and you only need to read the little paragraph for the card you're playing. So we played the base game, and she immediately wanted to play it again. Like, okay, well, let's play the card. So we randomly drew god cards each. There's some selection and drafting that happens, so technically the way it works is somebody picks 2 cards, and then if you're playing a 2-player, then the other person picks the one they want, and then the other one is left with the rest of them. So if there was a 4-player game, you'd pick 4 cards. The person who picked the cards would get the last one remaining, but the other people would get to pick their gods first. So then we played like 4 more games and played through like 8 of the gods and just barely scratched the surface on all the options. So again, an amazing gateway game. I would say that everyone should have this game. It is an abstract game without any kind of abstract feel. Because there's not a lot of theme to it. You're walking, you're moving and building a tower.
Probably the fact that you're building Santorini, that's kind of cool.
You're building Santorini. So it's so tactile and so the theme is so there that it doesn't... It's an abstract game with a huge theme, which is kind of opposite, but it just works for this game. I've heard about it. I've never heard anything bad about it. And finally, I just heard enough about it where I'm like, I'm going to pick it up. And I do not regret that at all. This will be a game that I will pull out anytime there's like 2 or 4 people. If we're having a dinner party and, you know, it's like, oh, let's play a game where we're eating dinner. This is maybe not eating, but afterwards, you know.
I like the idea of like a board game that centers around a place that has something really distinctive about it. Like I could imagine like a sort of romance Paris themed game or something. Like you could do that for different places. Yep. It's a cool idea.
Yeah. And I mean, you could take a picture at the end of every game and just, these are all our Santorini games. Yeah.
I'm thinking some Venice canals would be good too.
That would be perfect. Yeah.
Yep. So anyway, highly recommended. Kickstarter. I don't know if you're watching anything on YouTube, you will see that we have coasters, and there's these wooden coasters that have different D&D classes on it. Mine says at Game Master Chris because I had a mine customized. Kitty's using a cleric. Well, she has
The cleric next to me. I'm using a sorcerer right
now. And I really love these things. They're like really cool. So at GaryCon, I ran into the guy who makes them. And what did I say wrong?
No, sorry. Spencer clearly started a fire outside. Oh. You can smell the smoke.
I was like, is the place going to burn down? I was like worried. I was like, is there a fire in Chris's kitchen?
We're not burning sorry, that.
Listeners. No. Spencer's burning cardboard.
Well, and so to bring it back around, he does not laser cut these. It's not wood burning. It's like a bezel or what's the word I'm looking for?
Sure, it's not laser cutter or I don't know.
It's not a laser. It's like a drill.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
A bezel, yeah, that sounds about right.
Something, well, there's another word for it again. Someone tweet me the correct thing. I'll correct it next week. But in any case, so he's doing a Kickstarter on Call of Cthulhu versions of this. So I'm like, all right, I'm going to go back this. And actually, if you back it there, you can get them for much cheaper than if you buy them through his website. And you can get any design, and you can get customized designs. So, and he has dice boxes too, which has the kind of same thing with magnets, and it's like you can roll the dice in there. So anyway, RPG coasters is what this is. I'm hoping to talk to him a little bit about this. Just
that'd be a good gift for like people's birthdays.
That's it as a gift for Kitty and Spencer.
Right, there you go.
I have a paladin and ranger, sorcerer.
And bard, I think.
Bard,
yeah. Basically all the stuff that you guys have played in my campaigns over the years.
It's true.
And then I also backed Impulse, which is a 4X game. It came out a couple years ago, and now it's coming out again with expansions. The tagline is a quick-playing 4X game, and I'm like, well, I'm really into spacey 4X games, and I was thinking about playing around with a quick version of it. So I take a look at it, and one of the things I really like about this game is a lot of games have hexes, especially for space games, and you put the hexes together. This game uses cards. But the cards fit together. They're just regular card-sized cards, but they fit together like hexes. Because what will happen is on the top and bottom of the card is connection points. And on the left and right, there's two connection points apiece. So the cards are skewed a little bit from each other. So they all have six connection points. So they connect like hexes. Each one has like a special ability. I'm just taking a look at it. It's really not that expensive. I can't tell you what it is off the top of my head. But I'm like, all right. I will back this and try it out. And I'm pretty sure someone I was following backed it, and that's how I was able to see it. So if you want to back me on Kickstarter, follow me on Kickstarter, you can. Again, I back a lot of stuff, so I'm not saying back everything I do. I'm checking it out for you, but you can just follow Chris Steele on Kickstarter.
All right. So finally on to our game of today, where we talk about a game we played recently and give you our impressions of it. Today's game is Pandemic Legacy. We played October. We played two times in October, so we lost one. But we only have two more months to go. So keep an eye out for our...
It's hotting up. It really is.
Oh, when we were so close to winning that first... Because we actually went into the first part of October saying, all right, we're not going to win because we just need to do this particular goal. And I think we were able to do it. And then we were going to say, okay, let's go for it.
Oh, yeah, let's try to win.
And we were just one card away.
And there were a couple we realized in hindsight, there was a couple of ways we could have won the round. And we were like, oh, if only we'd done it like that, we would have won. No. Yeah.
So we immediately replayed it again. And we won it handily at that point.
We did.
So,
every time we play, I'm like, keep playing. I want to keep going.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
So damn good. So good.
So we are going to, now that we have, Josh isn't traveling as much. I have some time. We're going to pick a day in the next 2 weeks where we're just going to get together and just finish this game. Mm-hmm. So maybe it'll just be two games, maybe it'll be four games. We're going to finish it. And then we're going to do a side chat episode on this game, which will be clearly marked as a spoiler episode. But if you've played it before, that's the episode to listen to us talk about it. If you haven't played it before and you're not going to play it, we'll give you all the rundown of what you're missing. Or at least our experience of it. But it won't be on the regular episode. We're going to make sure it's separate from everything. All right. Shall we go on topic?
Why the hell not?
All right.
In this episode, we're talking about gateway games. These are games that have a low barrier to entry and a high level of casual fun. Catan, Carcassonne, and Ticket to Ride are all well-known gateway games. Let's see if we can come up with a few more.
All right, so this was my pick of topic last week, and I was all ready to go. And then Chris said, you can't talk about any of the gateway games, you know, because everyone knows them.
Like the old classics he's talking about. Like the Catans, ones. The Carcassonnes, the Ticket to Rides.
Yeah, the ones.
They're off the table.
Yeah, but do we want to kind of go through just a list of our, like, maybe each of us picks a favorite?
Yeah. Well, let's define what a gateway game is. Right.
That's a good point.
All right. So what is a gateway game?
No, I'm asking you. You're running the show. So if you were listening last week.
I got a little ambitious. took this on. All right. So a gateway game. A gateway game is what I think of is I love to play board games. I play them all the time. I am into a complex rule set. I will sit down and dedicate a long time to playing a game. A gateway game is something I would pull out that's going to take, I think, less than an hour is a good mark. The rules should be teachable in about 15 minutes.
Maybe even less.
Maybe less.
Yeah, 2 minutes.
Well, I don't know. It would take 2 minutes to teach it to you, maybe.
Right.
Okay. But I'm going to dedicate only 15 minutes to teaching a group of people who've never played the game before and maybe don't play board games very often.
Well, because that's the whole point, really, isn't it? The idea behind that gateway game is that you want to bring in people that wouldn't normally play those kind of board games or board games in general and kind of introduce them to the world. And it's going to be casual, easy, fun so that they don't get scared away.
And if they really, really like it, it's that gateway. It's the opening up into the world of, well, if you liked this, we should play this one. That's like kind of a step harder and a step harder until suddenly they're on Kickstarter backing things and they've turned into one of us.
Yeah. Which could happen.
One of us. One of us.
Yeah. I think, honestly, I really am serious that I think a gateway game needs to be taught in probably under 5 minutes. And the reason I say that, because I agree with you on the time. You definitely want to have something that plays under an hour. The shorter, the better, really. And not necessarily for us gamers that are more hardcore and we want something stronger, but because that will allow them to say, oh, I want to play again. And that gives you that bug of saying again, again, again. Santorini is like kind of like that. You know, you play it once and you're like, okay, let's do it again. And to teach this game takes exactly 90 seconds.
I suppose behind that rule is that is like not too many rules. Game that doesn't have too many rules will be able to be taught to someone in 5-ish minutes or a short period of time. Anything with too many rules, they're just going to start getting confused and their eyes are going to start glazing over like mine often does when you're explaining a more difficult game and I'm sort of not listening and like, oh goodness, when is it going to end? When are we going to play? So that, you know, that's the aim really there, isn't it? That you just have a game that has very simple rules and not many of them.
Yeah. So, and I think setup time too.
That's true. Unless it's something that you can set up while, like, I'm going to set this up. You guys go get a drink, go to the bathroom. I'll be done by the time you're finished with that.
Right.
If it's something a little bit heavier on the setup, as long as not everyone has to sit and put their pieces into their individual piles. You don't have to shuffle your own deck. None of that going in.
Yep. What about the themes of the game? So we will get into games. And if you're watching this, and I do not assume you're watching this on YouTube, but if you are, we always have a bunch of games sitting in front of us about whatever we happen to be talking about today. So we will talk about recommendations and stuff, but what about the themes of games?
I think that can be really important. Like, you know, my partner Gloria isn't into games, board games, but anything Star Trek themed might get her interested because she's a big Star Trek fan. So if you know that someone has a theme that will really capture their imagination, like I'm a massive Mars nut. So as soon as Terraforming Mars came out, I was like, I want to play that game. I love anything Mars themed. So it can totally be that kind of hook to get them in.
It has to be the right game, though, because sometimes they'll put like a reskin on more classic games, but I feel like they add some rules and fiddly bits to make it more like what they think the experience should be.
I see.
And it can sometimes take away from the gameplay because they're trying to fit it into this theme. So it depends. Like, it has to be a good game on top of being the theme that they like.
Yes. Star Trek Monopoly, it's still Monopoly.
It's still Monopoly.
But it may actually make it easier to get to the table if somebody like, I want to play a Star Trek game, and I know Monopoly, so I'll play Star Trek Monopoly. But, you know, the Harry Potter deck building game, for example, it's actually not hard to get someone to play a Harry Potter game. A deck building game, though, that's a little bit more deeper.
The other thing I think that the Harry Potter deck building game has for it is it's a cooperative game.
Yep.
So I think cooperative games are really good gateway games. I think Pandemic falls Definitely. On this list too, because even if they're having a hard time understanding the rules, knowing what they're supposed to do, if it's cooperative, you can say like, all right, here are my cards. Help me out. What should I do? And I know that sometimes that can fall into the alpha player. Somebody feels like they're doing everything, but I think it's almost like a interactive tutorial the first time.
Yep,
definitely. Yeah, I think having that helping hand as you're going through the game and feeling like, oh, I'm not, you know, against all these seasoned players. We're all together against the game, against maybe even one versus many can work well like this. You have this seasoned person as the one and everyone else is the many. I don't know how difficult or easy, because I haven't actually played hardly any one versus many.
If you think there not are alone.
Yeah.
Not Alone is a very, very quick game to set up.
That's true.
Very easy to explain. Now, it has 10 cards. 10 cards that have different abilities on it. So that's really the only thing you have to explain. But they're on the cards you're using. So the instructions are in your hand.
I'd say that one's maybe a little bit harder, a one versus many, because I think you have to have more than one person who knows what they're doing. So it doesn't feel like the one person who knows how to play the game is like just taking advantage of everyone else not understanding.
That's true.
That's a good point for one versus minis. You don't really want the one person to be like, okay, play me so I can destroy you. Because it's still a competition.
It is. But if you have a group where you have, you know, like if it's me and Chris and two other people, then I can be like, all right, I'm going to help out the many and we're going to play together against Chris and, you know, we're all going to work. So because you have to kind of take yourself out of the role of the one to give good advice to someone.
Yep.
Whereas if you're on the same team, it's really easy to be like, okay, so these are the cards. Let's look at this. I'm going to explain to you what this means. And
Well, and in a cooperative game, what you can do is present choices. Mm-hmm. So Pandemic,
definitely.
It's like, well, you could go here and do that, or you could do this and do that. And for you, you might have your preference, but if you at least outline that choice, so they are making the final choice, they're still going to feel like they're playing the game as opposed to just having the game played for them.
And here, a theme can really help. Like in Battle for Hogwarts or Hogwarts Battle, the deck building game, if they know Harry Potter and you like are looking at the cards, a lot of times this does it really well where the characters that you know do the kinds of things you would expect that character to do. So you have, like, Hermione's very smart. So if you have a Hermione card, it's probably going to give you, you know, more spells.
Yep.
Whereas, I don't know, Hagrid is very loving and caring. So he gives you lives and that kind of thing. And you can kind of see and recognize that theme in the gameplay.
Yep. And it draws people in, even though it's still a deck building game, which may be a foreign concept to non-hobby gamers. They're invested in how these characters play out and how these characters come together. So what about like size? You know, we have a various sizes. Guildhall is a very small box. The Resistance is actually a really good gateway game. We can talk about why. And then you have larger things like Pyramid Arcade is this big box, not huge, but there's a ton of pieces in it. But also an amazing gateway game because there are super simple games in there that you can play. And it goes up to complex games. It's very tactile. Where are we thinking on the size of these games?
I think it can be a tough balance because, you know, lots of fiddly bits can just seem very intimidating to people who haven't played board games before. Even Pandemic, which is, you know, I think very easy to understand and is a great gateway game, there is tons of cubes and pieces all over the place, and that just alone can be like, oh goodness, this is a full-on thing that I have to get my head around.
I think Pandemic really only works because it's a cooperative game and somebody's going to help you the first few times, know what all the things do that you need to have one or two people in a pandemic game to smooth it along.
To manage the bits. Yep.
But games like Santorini or Imhotep are, and even Pyramid Arcade, all the pieces are really the same pieces.
Yeah.
It's not a lot of complex bits, or Carcassonne even. It's tiles, it's pyramids, it's bricks. You're building things out of them or manipulating them in some way, but you don't have to know like the difference between your five different pieces in front of you.
Right. Yep. So let's talk about some actual game, and we've kind of sprinkled them in there. So let's just go through our favorite gateway games. Like, if we have friends coming over and they're not big gamers, but they're willing to play a game, what do you pull out?
Josh, what do you go for?
Well, I really like that Dixit game. I've only played it once, and it was a long time ago, but I remember it being similar to Mysterium.
Yep.
So essentially, there's kind of lots of cards with art on them, and one person is trying to essentially kind of describe to the other people which cards they're thinking of. And I just like it because it's very easy to understand. It's a very simple game mechanic of there are these beautiful cards with lots of different ideas on there, and you're trying to give hints to someone else about which card you're thinking of. And there's a lot of it garners a lot of conversation, which is always good in a gateway game, because you kind of want it to be that social thing. I think the best gateway games are very social and interactive, because people who tend to not be kind of into the board games, I don't know, I suppose think it's going to be a bit more kind of head down, difficult strategy, kind of working things out on your own. Whereas these games are very much more kind of interactive and fun for that reason, to kind of get casual people into it.
Yeah, I would agree.
I think my new one that I'd pull out is Imhotep. I really liked it. I love Egypt. I wanted to be an Egyptologist when I was in middle school. That was a big thing. I had all the Egypt Lego sets.
There was a club or something. Like, all the little girls wanted to be Egyptologists.
The Mummy came out.
Oh, that makes sense.
When I was around that age. It was a really fun movie. We made my mom go see it for Mother's Day. My mom has always been into Egypt. She has a series of books that she likes to read. So I think this would be a fun one to bring to my family. They would really like it. They are good gamers and they love Egypt. So it seems like a perfect.
Well, I mean, I really like this game, although I do question the gateway gaminess of it a little bit. We had a little bit of conversation about this before. I think it's because it's a point salad-y game, and there's like a lot of different ways you can get points.
But it's a gateway point salad game.
You're right. I think you're right in saying that it is, because it's a simple game mechanic. You're essentially just laying blocks down that will then go towards some sort of points system. But I think you can easily, as a beginner playing against people more difficult, get confused about the different choices you have, and then maybe like lose very easily. I would say if you're going to play this as a gateway game, let the other person win. Yeah. Because
see, I don't know. Yeah, I actually don't think that. So Imhotep, yes, there's strategy to it. So let's describe real quick. Imhotep, you're trying to do one of four different things. You're building a pyramid, building a burial
site,
a monument,
an obelisk.
Yeah, that's it.
And then there's one other.
And there's a marketplace.
And a marketplace that you can pick up little victory point tiles that help you do
cards
different things.
That do different things. Yeah.
So you have one of four things you can do, and you're loading your cubes. Each turn, you're going to load. You have your own private stash of cubes, and you're going to put those onto a boat. And eventually, someone's going to drive that boat to one of these four sections, and you're going to unload your cubes onto there. So no matter what, if your cube's on a boat, it's going to do something for you. Now, there are some ways of saying, well, if I'm in this order, when the boat gets unloaded, it's going to cover up their cube, and my cube's going to be on top, so I'm going to get more points. But it's hard not to get some kind of points. Like, no matter what you do, you're going
to
get points.
No, I agree with you. I think it's very easy. It's one of those kind of easy to play, hard to master, because there's a lot to think about. Like, even going into the tomb part, there's like a geographical aspect where the order in which you load your cubes is going to affect how many points you get later on in the game. Yeah. And that's just one section. Well,
but see, that's the thing. That's what makes it a great gateway game. Because I can teach it to you in under 5 minutes.
That's true.
You can play it, and your thing is, I want to play it again.
True. But again, I would be a little bit put off if I played this game as a beginner. And because I saw this at a convention, and I was a bit like, whoa, there's loads of stuff to do. And I was a bit intimidated to begin with. And once I got into it, it was fine. But I could see myself like losing a few times. And if you're someone that, I don't know, that takes away from the enjoyment.
If losing the game a bunch of times is going to ruin it for you, this might not be. Like,
right.
if they need to have a winning experience the first time they play, this might not be the best gateway game. But I picked it up pretty quick. I saw there was one thing that Chris did one time where there's these itty-bitty boats that you can just put your one rock in, and then Chris would do that and go to the market. And once a boat has docked there, you can't go there again. So he was just taking the card. He would do his one little boat. So he put his one little rock on a boat, and then I moved the boat somewhere else because I knew he was going to do that. And just those little like strategy bits are pretty quick to pick up once you see one round played. And because the game is played out over so many rounds, you have a chance to catch back up.
Yeah. You can learn from other people. Yeah. I'll agree with you on that.
So I think it satisfies some of the things. It's easy to teach. There's limited moves. But you are right. It could be still a little bit too deep for other players. I like the Resistance as a gateway game, honestly. It is a little bit trickier to teach because there's a lot of concepts to teach.
I mean, it's a social deduction game, and so it's got that party vibe, which is nice.
Yeah, but it has a lot of like, okay, you're going to decide a mission, then you're going to vote up or down on that mission, then you're going to vote, if you're on the mission, you're going to vote whether or not you succeed or fail on the mission.
The good thing about that is you can teach it as you play it.
Yes.
And that's fine.
Yep. And that's the thing with Resistance. And I've done this as icebreakers at work events and stuff. As soon as they play a round, they want to play again.
Yeah.
Like I say, it's a little bit trickier to teach, but it makes a great social game. It's a great game that, you know, anyone will play. If you are okay with that social dynamic of accusing each other of being spies. So it's not for everybody.
Yeah, because I that was one of my first experiences getting into the board gaming world was Resistance. And it was one of the most memorable. And maybe that's just because I like social deduction games. And I liked that whole, we're talking, we're having a conversation, like we're interacting so much. And it feels like, oh, there's this tension going on. Like, do they know I'm the spy or who's the spy? And so it has that powerful emotional impact that I think is quite good for gateway games to be very, very kind of effective, is to have that powerful emotional impact. I think it has that.
Yep.
What about Deception?
Deception, Murder in Hong Kong?
Yeah.
Excellent gateway game.
Love that. You do?
Yeah.
Okay. I was wondering, because I think it's a good one because there's the forensic pathologist role.
Yep.
Forensic investigator.
Yep. I think.
I don't know.
Whatever. There's the one person
who is pointing, who's doing the moving along the game.
Yeah.
And everyone else, I do think it's a little bit trickier to pick up. It has a few more bits. I had to watch a round played before I really understood it. But I think we managed to limp through a round pretty quickly.
Oh, yeah.
One of the reasons I like that one is because it's super easy to teach while playing it. You take on the role, the person teaching it takes on the role of the forensic investigator. I think that's the term they use. And you just guide everyone through. And then, all right, everyone go to sleep. If you've got the murderer card, wake up and choose two cards in front of you. You just say out the words, you know, point at a brown card, point at a blue card. All right, go to sleep. Everyone wake up. And then I can no longer talk. And actually, I'm not talking about the game, but I'm like, I'm going to pick a number of these different things. And as I do, you guys just look around the table and say, what am I trying to tell you?
The only thing that was frustrating is being the murderer the first time and maybe picking bad choices.
Yep. So it does take a little bit of practice and that's why when I teach it now, I say out loud every card I put down, I say, this is this, this is this, this is this. And if I see something like there's a lot of poison out there, it'd be like, Oh, poison looks like a good thing for, as a murder weapon, because there's all kinds of cards here. Kind of giving some
those
tips as we're going
really
through.
Good, yeah.
Yeah, so. I mean, we played with a non-gamer. My partner Gloria played with us, and she got it straight away. Like, it really did work as a gateway game. It was super easy for her to pick it up.
Yep.
I really like that one, too.
Yep. And you can do some more, like, dexterity games. Yeah, I kind of want to stay away from, like, the party games, Jenga, that kind of thing. But other party games like Codenames? Codenames, I think, is an amazing gateway game. It gets people sitting down. It gets people thinking. It's fun. It's not really a party game. It's a team game, but it allows people to kind of come together and work together, but against each other at the same time.
It has that real Dixit feel about it, because you have that interpreting of, this time it's words instead of artwork, but it starts that conversation.
Yeah.
What's the game where you put markers and you try to get people to guess the
concept.
Concept, yes.
Yep.
That one's a really fun one, I think, for a group to play.
Yep. So these are great games of kind of like breaking that ice. You know, once you have someone playing Codenames, hey, I have this other game you can come back and try. So maybe you go from Codenames to the Resistance, which is a little bit deeper. And then you go from Resistance to the Harry Potter Hogwarts battle game, which just starts introducing deck building. Then you can jump to Imhotep. And then suddenly you're playing Great Western Trail. You know, like,
I really like the good intros. I think Carcassonne, I think Imhotep. I don't know about Santorini. That was just right in front of me. But Carcassonne and Imhotep are really good introductions to Point Salad. And Point Salad is something, if you want to play deeper games, a lot of them have that.
Yep. Yeah, most Euro games are either Point Track or Point Salad-y. So we're running a little long on time, but I do want to get some input from the listeners. So every week I post up a thread at our Board Game Geek site on the podcast asking for input into the episode. So if you want to have input into our episodes, check out that. Follow the podcast site on Board Game Geek. There is a link in the show notes, and there's a link on our webpage if you want to go there too. So this week we got a few. Why don't you start it off, Kitty?
All right. So Tom has quite a list here of games that he likes. Splendor was one that we all talked about before we started recording and forgot to
Splendor
bring up.
Is honestly the game I play with parents. Like, I love the game, and everyone I've taught it to has enjoyed it.
And it's on the App Store for like $7, so that's another way you can play it.
Yep.
His go-to, he says, is King of Tokyo, which I have never heard of.
Oh, I've played that one. Today. And it was one of the first ones I played. It's really simple and easy.
Yeah, King of Tokyo is the Yahtzee and Godzilla got together and had a love baby. Child, baby love baby?
Definitely.
Whatever they
baby
had.
Love baby.
Yeah.
They should be called that.
There's stand-up monsters. There's big green dice. It is a quintessential gateway game. It is so easy to learn. And it's so tactile.
It's great for kids, that one, as well. That's another sort of kids in a certain age range, maybe like, I don't know, 5 to 8 or something.
Yeah.
I think you could play that.
You could probably go 5 if you had like a focused 5-year-old, but the games only run maybe 15, 20 minutes, and there's a lot of depth. You can add extra abilities and cards and things to it.
And they're fun cartoony monsters, the art to it.
There is reading involved in it, because there are ability cards you can get, so 5 might be a little young.
That's true.
Yeah.
All right. So, going on, Trevor Olson, lots of ones we've already mentioned here. Let's see, Guillotine?
Guillotine is, you line them up and you chop people's heads off, and you don't want to be the one that gets your head chopped off.
Yeah, these are from his games that have weird themes. Sushi Go?
Yep.
Gloom and Dixit?
Yeah, Gloom, so Dixit, we've mentioned Gloom. I've mentioned on a previous episode, you're basically, you know, the first family who dies ends the game, and that's, you know, you're trying to tell this story about how these people are epically dying.
We've got C. Marie here has added a few more that we haven't spoken about. I've not heard of these. We've got Potion Explosion, which is apparently kind of like Candy Crush. I'm interested in a board game that's kind of like Candy Crush.
Yeah, so Potion Explosion is, you're trying to make potions, And you're doing that with little marbles, basically. And so you swap marbles, and if once they're next to each other, you take those two marbles, and then more marbles will fall down. So it's like this board. Hello. Yeah, so it's like this board with like tracks in it. And if they fall down and more marbles are connected of the same color, you get those. So you can build these chain reactions.
That's
and
you're just trying like to get Candy Crush.
Basically, Candy Crush is a little bit of a swap. This is, you have to do it in columns just because it's a physical game.
Right.
But then you build these potions, and these potions give you powers that allow you to get more marbles so you can build better potions next time. So it is a fun game of like, and it is also available on the iPad if you guys want to try it out there.
Ooh, definitely.
Isle of Sky, I have not actually played, but we had a couple people recommend this. So this one I might have to check out. Fuse is a not real time, but a timed game. So you have 10 minutes to get through all these cards, and you're rolling dice, and they're different colored dice, and you're trying to do different things with the dice depending on the cards, and you're trying to get rid of all the cards before the time runs out. So it's a cooperative dice rolling timed game, which can be a lot of fun. And then a number of people have mentioned Escape the Curse of the Temple. Have you guys played that?
No.
No, I don't know about that one.
So that's the problem with there's so many games. Like, I play a lot of games, and games like this where I know that I should play, I just have never got around to playing. So definitely worth playing. Honorable mentions, Mysterium, Codenames, Pictomania, haven't played, but Sushi Go Party, and she mentioned Concept here. Let's see, what else do we have? Steve mentioned Love Letter. Love Letter is, have you played Love Letter?
I've played that one.
You've played Love Letter. Yeah. It's, I think you have 13 cards.
Something like that.
And everyone has, everyone gets one card, and you draw one and play one. And you're trying to basically be the one left with cards at the end. And each card has a little bit of abilities. You're trying to guess what other people have, and you're trying to knock people out. So you played in a number of rounds, and the first person who wins X number of rounds.
There's a lot
wins.
Of games like this, you know, like where there's a small pack of cards with only a few different cards with different abilities, like Coup comes to mind.
Coup, yep.
And those kind of games can be really good gateway games because it's just a few rules, a few cards, and it goes away from that whole pandemic. Oh my God, there's so much stuff here.
Yeah, I will say Coup is one of those ones that are kind of hard to teach because here you have Coup, you have two cards down in front of you, and each one of them has a role on it. They could be the same, but normally they're different just based on random factors. But you can claim that you're any role, and your cards are face down, so people don't know. So it's a bluffing game, but if you first come out of the gate, the first time you play it, unless someone's familiar with bluffing games and that kind of thing, nobody understands when to or why to bluff because your bluff can get called as well, and that's how you get knocked out of the game.
You need to have the right kind of person who likes that kind of bluffing element.
Yeah. It is a great game. It's great for dinners. Like if you're at a restaurant, you just want to throw Coup out there because it's two cards in front of you. There's really very little to it. There's a couple little chips that track your – I think you track your life or gold or – oh, there's a word I'm in something in it. It means that you have political power, whatever that happens to be.
Influence, maybe.
That actually, I think that might be that influence. I was there. All right. Correct me on Twitter. All right. So we're running really not super long on time, but I'm trying to keep us on time. Any other games that you want to throw an honorable mention out there? And thank you, C. Marie and Trevor Olson and Steve for your feedback on Board Game Geek. Leave us, email us or respond to that thread too if we've missed your favorite gateway game. But what about you, Josh? Anything else?
I know we've talked about it on other episodes before, but I really love Insider.
That's a great one.
20 questions, but one person also knows the answer and is helping the team. And you've got to figure out who the insider was the whole time. Really quick rounds, easy to teach. Love it.
Yep.
What do you think about Hanabi?
I
felt like I had to say it.
Yep. So
your face is very pained, Chris.
Yeah. I'm mixed on Hanabi. Now I'm in the minority on this. A lot of people really like it.
It came on the top 10 on the Board Game Geek list.
Yeah.
But I don't like it either.
Yeah. Right. So the way Hanabi plays, if you've not played it, is you have fireworks. You're basically trying to make a fireworks show. The theme is very, very loose, though. Essentially, you have cards that are numbered 1 to 5. There's 1 5, there's 2 4s, 3 3s, 4 2s, 5 1s. And they're in four different colors. And you're trying to, basically play them up from 1 to 5. There's 4 or 5 colors. I think there's only 4
Sounds
colors.
A bit Uno-esque.
Yeah. Yes, but the thing is, you don't see the cards in your hand.
It's played hand out.
Yeah.
And they're, it's a cooperative game where the person's playing across from you.
Yeah, so it's your hand is blind to you.
Oh, that's interesting.
So as you go around, other people can give you one of two pieces of information. They can tell you what cards in your hand are of a particular color. So they can say those three cards are blue. Or they can tell you what the number is. Those two cards are fours. And based on that, you have to remember what you're doing.
I see.
And then at you have on your turn, you have three different things you can choose to do. You can either say, I'm going to give someone information, I'm going to play a card, or I think you can say, I'm going to refresh a clue. Because you only get a certain number of clues. If you're going to give someone information, you're spending. So, but if you play a card and it's not a valid card, that card gets discarded. And you just play until you try to get the most points. And the most point is 25, so it must be five colors because you can get up to 25. So five, one to five of five different colors. And that's the whole game. Now, it's metagamed just depending on who you're playing with. Different people have their own little thing. Well, if I don't know anything about a card, I'll always move it over to the left. So if it's you haven't told me anything about it and it's on the left for too long, that's the one I'm going to discard. Or, you know, there's a lot of metagaming things involved with it.
Right.
In its purest sense, I think it's even harder to be a game because then you don't have anything to read. But it is an interesting game. I'm not going to say that it's not one of my favorites.
It sounds like a unique mechanic, but yeah.
But it is.
Whether it works or not.
It is an interesting game, and it is kind of a fun thing to play with someone you really like and try to figure it out.
It qualifies in a lot of ways on the Gateway Games kind of criteria.
Super easy to learn. Pretty quick to play. It's a co-op.
You just don't maybe
don't like
it
very much.
Yeah. And it's a memory game, too.
It is. Right?
Yeah.
So.
But, yeah. I don't, like I say, most people I know love this game. It's not my game. But then again, I've had some bad experiences playing it with certain people who get overly involved in it. So I kind of avoid that type of game that can create a, like, what were you thinking? Why would you do that? Or why would, like, okay, why am I playing this game just to get yelled at? So,
right.
Like I said, bad experiences can lead to not liking a particular game.
All right. Any final thoughts, Chris?
I think all games can be gateway games if they're taught correctly, as long as they also can play in under an hour. So, and which cuts out a lot of games, but
it really does.
Yeah. If you can play a game in under an hour, it can be a gateway game, regardless of the complexity. If you can teach it in under 5 minutes or while you're playing the game, I think that's the best thing to think about with a gateway game. Just because you love it doesn't mean it makes a good gateway game. You know, I'm looking at a bunch of short games here, but like Great Western Trail, that game to me is phenomenal. I am not going to have my mother play that game.
Right.
Just not going to do it. So, no.
But if you know someone who has learned four or five other games that you've kind of gatewayed them in,
yep,
that might be a good next step.
Yep. If someone really likes Imhotep, let's try Great Western Trail. So, I think that's a pretty decent episode. Let us know what your favorite gateway games are. Let us know what you missed. Give us a short description so just in case we haven't played it, we can tell other people about it. But until next week, Josh, why don't you take us out?
Indeed. Well, thanks for listening. And remember, we love your feedback. So consider leaving us an iTunes review. Thank you for the reviews this week. And email us with comments or questions at tabletopgametalk@gmail.com. You can also reach us at Twitter, @tabletopgametlk, and directly with @GameMasterChris, @Josh'sBlonde, and @KittenL. And if you like what you hear, help us spread the word by liking or sharing our posts. Finally, a huge thank you to our patrons, Emil Jiljam, Jacqueline Hagar, Shane Poole, George, Jason Strong, Lucas Hartso, Charles Finch, Trevor Olson, Brian Arnold, Josh Arntz, Sean Kelly, Rudy Liu, C. Marie, Daniel Shepherd, John Merkel, Joseph Lee, Sam from NY, Michael Ohl, Stefan Phillips, and all the others. And if you'd like to support us via Patreon, you can find us more at tabletopgametalk.com/Patreon. All patrons auto entered into all of our contests with bonus entries, so check it out. For more options to show your support, visit our Support Us page on our website. Until next week, when we talk about Board Game Geek, please keep playing games and having fun.
Good night.